Let me play this because I watched your qualifying race for you to make the Olympic team. What a performance. Here, let's play some tape of the NBC announcer.
And Famoletti, the leader from the outset, three laps to go.
And Steve Prefontaine would be proud of the pace that Famoletti is setting. Pre was a front runner. Fam certainly is a front runner right now. Olinger.
Now, you like to run in front, but I think in this race, you were maybe out in front even more than you expected to be. Tell me about your strategy, if we could call it that.
Well, the strategy, it comes from a lot of different places. The main thing is that I've always loved front run. I've done it since I first ran my first race, and I kind of got away from that the past few years, and I just wanted to really run the way that I do with instinct, through my instinct and guts, and at the same time just punish the field.
Now, going into that last water jump, are you thinking of that barrier, oh my God, I hope I make it? Or do you kind of artificially psych yourself up like, yeah, here comes the water jump. Yeah, I'm going to put distance between myself and my competitors.
Before the race and during the race, you're just thinking to yourself, man, just don't mess this up. Just get out there and do what you got to do. But when it comes time to really do it, coming around the turn into the water jump, I just tell myself I'm going to kill this thing.
Yeah.
And a lot of times I'll curse over the water jump or just mumble under my breath some nasty stuff just to learn to be aggressive, not be afraid of it, but be aggressive and attack it.
Do steeplechasers love the barriers or do they loathe the barriers? What's their mental attitude towards the barriers?
It's exciting to do it. It's, like the NASCAR race, people like to watch it because you're not sure what's going to happen, and in the race, you're not sure what's going to happen. So there's this heightened sense. It's not just like a 5K or a marathon where you can settle into a pace and zone out and get into the zone and focus, like a lot of athletes will say.
Yeah.
The steeplechaser is no zone. You're constantly focused. You have to shift and move and be able to adjust. And I know that firsthand because I fell in the Olympic Games in 2004 in Athens and just barely clipped a hurdle. I mean, a centimeter higher, I would have cleared it. But mistakes like that happen. And that was a painful, painful race. So I'm at the point where over the past few years, I've actually feared the barriers. And I've started to get over that and really get into enjoying the race and having a good time and attacking the barriers.
You said after the trials, I think you told ESPN the magazine, or at least that's where I read it, that your goal in Beijing is a bronze. You said there are going to be people out there who cheat. I live in reality, but maybe I could sneak in and steal it from one of those dirty jerks and get the bronze. Were you kidding, or is that, you're kind of clear-eyed?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I'm not in the sport for fame or success or to make a ton of money. There's really not that much money unless you're winning everything. And these guys who want that try to win everything by cheating. I'm in it for the purity of it. I love to run. This is what I do. This is who I am. So, I come to that understanding that there's going to be people that do that, and I'm just going to do the right thing. And doing the right thing, my chances seem better to get a bronze,
Yeah. Do for elite athletes like yourself, do offers of doping come to you, or do you, if you wanted to do that, would you figure you'd have to seek it out yourself?
No, I think you'd have to pretty much seek it out yourself. I'm sure there's people who run with certain people. If you go to a certain gym, I'm sure there's people doing steroids there. So if you're hanging out with
right.
the wrong crowd, you're probably going to get mixed in with that.
But and people also...
I think people choose to hang out with the wrong crowd,
right. People might consciously choose a specific coach because maybe they have a reputation for that. Or maybe just like, hey, somehow he's shaved 15 seconds off these people's times, and you kind of know what that means.
Well, that's the tough part about it. A guy like Justin Gatlin, who came to the University of Tennessee, was on the team when I was here, was a really, really nice guy, church-going guy, really had his head on straight, extremely talented, the last person in the world who would ever have to take a steroid or anything like that. So you speculate, well, maybe he was sabotaged, maybe someone did do something like that to him to have him get a positive test. But at the same time, you look at the coach he was with, this guy Trevor Graham, and you look at the athletes who have tested positive under that guy, and he was under speculation for the longest time, and I think he still is. And you think to yourself, well, why would you put yourself in that environment to be around someone like that, And maybe it was just a lapse in judgment on his part. Maybe he didn't know any better. Maybe he's just that naive because he's such a nice guy. I don't know, but in my opinion, you can't plead ignorance. You have to know what's going on around you.
With pro baseball players, there is a circle the wagon mentality. Also, there it's a team sport, so there's that whole ethos of sticking up for a teammate and putting team above the individual. And one of the things that does is it really made effective doping rules almost impossible for many years in baseball. But what's the ethos like among the track stars? Because I know a bunch of them not only won't dope, but really want to call out the people who do dope or have ever tested positive. But then there are a whole other bunch of track stars who just kind of don't want to air dirty laundry. So what do you think about the track community in this issue?
I think what the problem is a lot of people have my opinion, and they hate these dopers, and they want to just point the finger out and yell at them and really make a big thing about it. But at the same time, it's, you don't want to put yourself out there like that, because then you become that guy, you know, and you're vulnerable for making statements. And really, we do what we do because we love what we do. We like to run, and we're athletes. We're not politicians. You know, that's not our job. But at the same time, if no one else is standing up, the athlete has to stand up and say something.
Now, if you just spoke of, you know, the need to be silent or speak out, because these Olympics are in Beijing, that's another issue. They're not in Brussels. And so most athletes, though not all, are taking the tact of, you know, I have to concentrate on my sport. It's really hard enough without thinking of global issues. But you've spoken about what it means to compete in Beijing, and I was wondering if you could, you know, give me your thoughts on that.
The Olympic Games being what it is, and you know, the whole story of the Olympic truce, where when the Olympic Games first started, there was the truce where all wars were put aside and the games were the focus, and it was about the competition and peaceful competition. So I think that needs to be the focus in Beijing, and I think people should really come to Beijing. My family's coming out and experience what it's like there. It's a beautiful place. The people there are incredible, and I think a lot of people should come out there and really experience the Olympic experience.
Would you rather have it be in a place like Brussels, or a place without the overall, you know, the context of what is going to be, because it is in Beijing?
You know, the Olympic Games is political in and of itself in that way, where it's about peace. It's about bringing everybody together in a nonviolent way. That's what sport really is. Sport's not about entertainment. People watch sports because they want to be moved. They want to be affected in some way, in a positive way. They like seeing a guy come from the back of the race to win the underdog, or they like seeing a guy do something incredible that he just didn't know he could do and push the limits of human achievement. And that's the great thing about the Olympics, where you're taking people who wouldn't normally communicate with each other and putting in an environment where they're pushing each other and helping each other get to that next level for the greater good of, you know, humankind. And so I think probably the more difficult place it's in, that's adaptable, that you can actually compete in, you know, without any issue, is probably the best place for it to be.
Now, you say sports isn't about entertainment. It's about, at its best, something deeper, something that hits you at the gut level. But you, sir, are entertaining in how you show up to all these races. Sometimes you're clean cut, sometimes a mohawk. I saw you with the mountain man beard there in Oregon. What are you thinking about with Beijing? Facial hair, no hair, weird patterns, anything?
I don't know. It was funny, a journalist from a Beijing newspaper asked me the same question.
Mm-hmm.
I said, maybe I'll shave the whole front of my head and leave that long ponytail like they do in ancient China.
Yeah.
But I was just kidding, man. I'm not going to do anything like that.
All right. Anthony Famoletti, not going for fame, but every day he achieves fame. Thanks a lot, man.
Thanks a lot, man. It's good
talking
to you.
Bye-bye.